This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Hey, monkeys. Welcome back, or welcome to Snark Monkey number 53 with stand-up comedian extraordinaire Brad Williams. By the way, please follow us on Twitter at The Snark Monkey, like The Snark Monkey Facebook page, and you can listen to us on iTunes. Please subscribe. Just search Snark Monkey. Also on Spreaker.com and on iHeartRadio.com. And, of course, on the website at SnarkMonkey.net, because SnarkMonkey.com was taken by somebody who's not using it, and I'm too cheap to try and buy it off them. Some Europeans using it for something stupid and not noble like this effort is. Larry Morgan here, and Brad Williams is the guest. Now, right up front, I got to apologize. I don't know why I'm sorry for you, to you, but there's great entertaining conversation in this talk with Brad, but there's some of it that's a little dated, but I left it in. Of course, depending on when you listen to this, of course, podcasts are on demand, and you might be listening to this 2 years after we record it, and then everything's dated. But at the time we recorded it, he was about to go up to the Brea Improv and perform some shows, and then he was going to head off to China, and we talked about basketball and the Golden State Warriors a little bit. Well, all that's done. You probably know that. But I left it all in because the conversation was interesting. I'm hoping that we can have Brad back soon and find out about his trip to China, which must have been fascinating. If you want to see Brad in concert and you live, for instance, in Columbus, Ohio, he'll be there. He'll be at the Funny Bone in Columbus next week. He'll be at the Montreal Comedy Festival after that if you head up to Montreal for that hilarious few days. And then he'll be moving on to the Tampa Improv in August. And Virginia Beach, the Funny Bone there, later part of August. It's all on his website if you go to bradwilliamscomedy.com and check him out. If you don't know Brad, you need to get to know Brad. His latest Showtime special is available on Showtime On Demand and probably soon to other streaming things. It's called Daddy Issues. It's great. It's a huge step forward for him. And this is good stuff. So we talk about a bunch of things and stuff. And comedy, and there's laughs, and there's some things that'll make you go, ooh, wow, did they really say that? I know. Controversy. Yeah, I'm trying to dig up some interest on this damn thing. Come on, people. Bring it. Brad Williams brings it. It's episode number 53 of Snark Monkey. Enjoy. Daddy Issues is the Showtime special, which is awesome, and which is why I was telling you I almost wore my San Francisco Giants jersey today. I'm a big Giants fan. It's no spoiler alert because it's in the teaser for your special. So, but you have a radio background. Not only are you a regular on our buddy Kevin and Bean show here in the Los Angeles area, but you actually had a radio experience.
Yeah.
I talk about it in the special.
Yeah, I did the monstrous thing that is morning radio. God, it's such an individual hell that is the morning radio show. And yet there are some people that's all kind of like comics where it's like that's all they can do. And that's one of the reasons why I left. I exaggerated the reasons why I left greatly on the special. because it's not, and this goes for any joke, it's not that funny if I go, yeah, so I did this morning radio show, but then I really like sleep, and I missed performing and getting random pieces of tail on the road.
Yeah,
so,
having some kind of nightlife.
Yeah, so, and I hated going to bed at 8:30 at night, so I quit. Yeah, that's not very funny.
But
so,
it is a very specific existence, you're right. And mm-hmm. I think, and I have been a morning man, I have never been a successful morning man, and I think what it takes uh-huh. is, like you say, a completely different mentality, because there is no human being that is meant to be alive at those hours
yes.
And function like any other normal human being. It's impossible.
Yes,
and
the human body was not designed to go to bed at 8 or 9 and right. wake up at 4.
And by the way, 9 o'clock in the summertime, there's still sun up, and yeah. that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and the thing is sure the show starts at 6, but and they're like, well, why do you wake up at 4 then? Well, because you need an hour to get refreshed with everything that happened the night before.
Right.
You have to know the news that just happened the night before. What are people actually talking about? You can't start your morning by talking about the same things that you were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, not to mention, even though obviously traffic at that time of morning is nowhere near as bad as it can be during rush hour,
sure.
I was continually shocked driving in at 4 or whatever.
What were you
at?
Were
of the
you
shit
LA?
I had to. Yeah, yeah, coming
well,
down the 405
yeah,
in the
well,
middle of the night.
That's all the construction. That's when exactly. all the construction happens, and now you're just like, and they don't care that you have a morning radio show. And it's one of those things where you want to shout to all the other cars, like, I know you have jobs, but if I don't, they just go on air. Like, because a radio station never stops. It's like a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, there's never that, please hold while the host gets here because he hit the snooze button too many times.
Yeah, if you are in any way lackadaisical about your starting time when you're in radio, you won't last very long. It's
right.
like kind of being a doctor for an operation. It's like you can't walk in
yeah,
15, 20 minutes late, whatever.
No,
it's
you like, can't. Like, there's so many
I'll
jobs.
Make up for it in the other end. No,
yeah,
it didn't work
like
that way.
My show tonight is at 8 p.m. at the Bray Improv, but I can get there at 8:30.
Yeah.
It's fine, and I'm not the first one up, so I can get there late.
So you were doing radio in the Bay Area, and you were the sports guy, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Were you a sports guy going in,
always.
Or is that, yeah?
Yeah, which all is right. really weird, because being a 4'4" man, I always feel weird, like, when I'm really passionate about sports, and I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have done that play, you should have done the other play. It's like, dude, you're 4 foot nothing, like, you have no right. It was literally a joke, I think, on my first album, where I was watching basketball with a couple of my dwarf buddies, and they were arguing, like, what Kobe Bryant should have done, and I'm like, you're midgets, you can't tell Kobe what he should have done. Like, that's you have to know your limitations.
Except,
and know what you're like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but the difference is
yeah.
your limitations when it comes mm-hmm. to screaming at anybody on a sports broadcast
yeah.
is not a greater limitation than any other average sports fan, because
right.
they couldn't do it either.
No.
So you're still You still have every right to
yeah.
be the idiot sports fan and
yeah.
say, are you kidding me? He was wide open.
Yeah.
None of us can then, execute in that level.
Yeah. And then, yes, I'm a huge sports fan, and I'm aware that sports are meaningless. I'm aware of the fact that they're not from the city that I'm rooting for. They don't care about the team. They just want to make a lot of money, which they should. I'm aware of all of that. So don't be the person, because I have friends now that are kind of like the hipster guys. Are like, I don't know why you watch sports, man. It's stupid. It's just a distraction from what's going on in the world. Yes. It is.
Exactly.
And thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the distraction, because, sure, I could watch news reports all day about the slave labor going on in Dubai, and that they are basically have human slaves there, that they trick these people. I can know about the sex trafficking. I can know about the things that are ruining our environment on a permanent level that we could probably never undo. Yes, I could read all of that. Or... I can see Peyton Manning throw a touchdown pass and smile.
Yes.
Which one will I do?
Why do you think that the Cleveland Browns, as shitty as they've been for such a long time, mm-hmm. are still going to get, in the middle of winter, an entire stadium of people to go and scream their ass off?
Yes.
Because they live in fucking Cleveland.
Yes.
And they have this one moment of joy they
yes.
get to have
yes.
on Sunday.
And there's something about, and I know it's like, well, what, all right, so your team won the championship. What does that do? studies have shown that in the cities
by the way,
studies have also shown that 98% of the people believe what you say, as long as you say, studies have shown.
Excellent.
But that the economy of that particular city that wins the championship improves, like work goes better, like people work harder, they work better. Sure, the productivity goes down for a second while they party, but then it brings money into the city, and it helps that city financially.
Look, anything in my mind that can give anybody a collective sense of pride over over race and economic issues or political issues, if you can bring people together over something for even a moment that they can agree on, that's something positive. I mean, I'm a relatively intelligent, practically somewhat sort of college-educated human being, and I'm a Giants fan and a Golden State Warriors fan. I have been for a long time.
Sure.
And there's nothing right now that makes me happier than watching Steph Curry just raining threes down on people.
I don't even like the team. I'm a Laker fan, but that makes me happy too, just because it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's an incredible feat of I don't want to say strength, but just athleticism.
When you see somebody that skilled at something, who's not a complete dickhead.
Yes, that helps.
Which, by the way, here's my one caveat.
Okay.
I did have to check out during some of the latter Barry Bonds years. Once it was very obvious and apparent that he was doing what he was doing, I was not a happy Giants fan around that time.
Well, you know what? Good. So you're the one that actually kind of had a come to Jesus moment.
I put all of my Giants shit away. I became a Mets fan for a couple of years.
Wow.
Yeah. I went East Coast National League.
Well, I mean, you were used to getting your heart broken in the Barry Bonds years of being a Giants fan.
So to jump to
being a Mets fan is like, that's same stuff, different day.
And I couldn't be accused of being a bandwagon jumper because the Mets just
sucked.
Yeah, sucked.
They were horrible at that time. So,
but I looked
good.
I looked good in blue.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. It's your damn colors. So,
exactly.
And I respect that. And you know what? You can tell a lot about someone based on their either knowledge about sports, or if they are a bandwagon fan, or what kind of players they support. Like, it kind of reflects in their personality.
Oh, totally.
And I'm sure. And then I had a girlfriend that was like so mad at me when I was watching sports too much. Like, you know, it's meaningless, right? You know, it doesn't like mean anything. It's not. They don't care about you. And I'm like, you watch The Bachelor. Do you think they're there for the right reasons? You think they're getting there for romance? Do you think and you're passionate about it? When some girl dumps a guy or doesn't give a rose to a guy that you really wanted, you're like, how dare she? And it's like a smite on both your houses, to pull a Shakespeare reference.
Wow. Boy, we've had studies and Shakespeare here so far.
So it's like we all have our things.
Yeah.
We all have our things that are meaningless bullshit. We all have them. Just your meaningless bullshit is not better than my meaningless bullshit.
No, I was just thinking about this because I bet as a creative person you have had this, and I've heard comics talk about this all the time, actually, that little kind of dark period you put yourself into when you know you're not doing anything productive.
Yeah.
And that somebody described it as that, you know, that bottomless pit in the middle of the afternoon where you end up, you know, watching porn and masturbating, and then there's, you know, several hours of guilt about I should have been writing my screenplay around that period.
Should have been doing something.
And I was thinking about this. It's like I love watching. I watched two episodes of House of Cards last night before I went to bed.
There you go.
It's a really good fucking show.
Great show.
I get so much great enjoyment out of it.
Sure.
There is nothing I will do. There is no skill I have learned other than being a vile and evil politician.
Right.
I already knew about.
Sure.
I didn't learn any acting skill from Kevin Spacey because I wasn't watching it for that.
Yeah.
And I already kind of know how to write and how to direct. I've done that stuff before. I wasn't doing that to learn anything. There are no practical skills I took from that. And I remember thinking, this has just been an opiate for my brain to kind of end my day.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yes, it's okay.
Okay, thank you.
Human biology.
That, by the way, that was my answer to myself. Yes.
Human biology dictates that, on average, human beings are pleasure-seeking creatures.
Right.
We are pleasure-seeking creatures. We like We like to have the dopamine released in our brain.
Yeah.
And whatever releases that, that's what we're going to do. Some find it in drugs.
Yes.
Some find it in alcohol. Some find it in women. And some find it in TV shows. Some find it in... I had Paul Feig, the director of Bridesmaids.
Yeah,
and the upcoming
Ghostbusters. That everybody hates already.
Yeah, I had him on my podcast. The episode's going to come out in July, right before Ghostbusters. And when how he turns his brain off, Lego.
Seriously?
He's a 52-year-old guy, and when he rewards himself as a treat, when he does something, he buys a new Lego set, and he puts it together. And to me, that is beautiful.
That's amazing.
Right?
Love that.
Right? Isn't that there's something good and pure about that? That you just do something like that, and it makes you happy. That happiness doesn't hurt anyone.
Have you heard about that? It's all over YouTube now, and I can never remember
Chewbacca lady.
Nope. No.
Chewbacca lady's all over
all
YouTube
over the
right
internet.
Now.
Yeah,
she got a scholarship to a Florida college.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah, but then
by the time I post this, nobody will remember what that is.
Sure.
Because we'll have moved on to the new thing. But,
yeah,
but that had way more of a shelf life than I ever expected.
Oh my God! And some people are like, "Well, all she did was make a video. Why does she get a scholarship to a school?" It's like it's a Florida college. Calm down. School, arguably,
mm-hmm. And scholarship. Really?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The phenomenon of the YouTube reference was there are these videos that recreate this. Have you heard about this? It's the repetition of certain words in kind of a calming way that gives you this sensation, this like extremely pleasurable sensation that kind of washes over you.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Something that do you know what I'm
yeah,
talking
yeah, yeah.
about?
Well, I mean, there's
and it's not sexual. It's
no.
not sensual, but it is something. And it usually has something to do with the repetitive nature and soft tones and
yeah.
there's yeah you know what I'm talking about
yeah
right?
a lot of people go to sleep like that
yeah
there are sleep podcasts that someone just says words over and over again
and they talk and
tones.
They even talk yeah they talk yeah. about I'm stroking your hair right now and
yeah.
I'm touching
like
the
said,
tips of your ears
not sexual
yeah. not at all
it's just to calm you down and it's funny because there's yin and yang to everything in life. So while there's those words and tones that calm you down, the word in the English language that gets people the most upset is the word moist.
I saw that come up recently.
And you say the word moist, and some people just have a reaction where they will literally like – and a friend of mine is one of these people where she just like trembles. She trembles and she gets the chills. You will see goosebumps form on her arms. All you have to do is just look at her and go moist.
It's mostly women too for
yes.
some reason.
Yes.
Because that's one of those hack radio bits that every morning show has done. What's your least favorite word? What word makes you crazy?
Yeah.
And that just, always comes
right,
up.
Right,
and
it's
now there are
moist.
Literally – studies show that
mm-hmm.
that is absolutely – it's one of the – least liked words
yep.
in the English language.
Yep.
So yeah, for me, so you talk about Paul Feig's Legos.
Yeah.
For me,
what's your thing?
I remember in college that when I would have a particularly like stressful, I would watch Mr. Rogers.
There you go.
And his voice and his
takes
tone
you back to childhood.
It wasn't even that.
Calm
it was
down.
Just it just put me in a place that I felt
yeah.
safe. And now you watch some of that stuff, and it feels really creepy all
oh,
of a sudden.
There's some YouTube videos that are like the mega mixes of the creepiest things he ever said. And when you hear it, you're like, oh, wow. But then that just shows you one other thing, that a lot of times when parents complain about certain some content, like, it's going to ruin my child, the child doesn't care.
No, not at all.
They don't know.
No.
They don't know what that means. Like when Mr. Rogers would tell a story about when he was a kid and an old man would just come watch him and they would do things together or some I remember one clip of this little creepy montage is him going, Don't you like to take a bath? Don't you like to just get in the water? Doesn't it feel good? Water flowing all over your body, and you're like, wow. Like, now we're adults, that's creepy as fuck. But when you're a kid, you're just like, yeah, that feels great,
sure.
Mr. Rogers.
And that's the thing. It was probably, as a kid, that probably was very calming. And I was like, of course, that feels great, Mr. Rogers. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Because it's all context. It's all learned stuff. I mean, you talk, part of what I love about your comedy is that you broach prejudice and do you think that you might be literally the least politically correct comic working but on a successful level you don't think so?
No, you got guys like Louie, you got guys like Jim Jeffries. My God, Jim Jeffries.
Jim's pretty out there.
And you got guys like Doug Stanhope, but
that's still a different kind of direction, I think. That's Doug. Doug, to me, engages in a way that he wants to piss people off.
Sure.
You're talking about stuff that does piss people off that shouldn't, and you break it down as to why. So much of that, is like context and what you were taught. Prejudice, I believe, usually comes from nothing but what other people tell you.
Sure, because we're born pure.
We're
born not knowing that we shouldn't like this person or this group or this anything. It's all learned. And so that's the thing, is I'm not trying to be politically incorrect. I don't sit down and be like, ooh, what can I say to piss people off?
No, that's what I mean.
I just say things that I mean and I truly believe. And because we're in such a society where we always have to be safe and watered down, and oh my God, do you know this in radio, where you can't say anything offensive to where everyone flips the F out.
Yeah, unless you're willing to take the repercussions of everything from, you know, 1,000 listeners groups who, you know, form some sort of boycott corporate entity that says you have to apologize for it.
So, you'll love this. And I'll challenge the people. Because sometimes I've got notes on my act that I actually have listened to, if it's a good note. On my second album, I do a bit about, which is a true story, about the album's called Hi-Ho, if you want to look it up. It's about a story about when I was flying from Salt Lake City to Sun Valley, Idaho, and it was on one of these little puddle jumper planes, and it was announced that we were too heavy to fly. And they asked if anyone had flexible travel plans so we could, some people could fly later, lighten the load. I had flexible travel plans. I fly all the time, so I was certainly going to use the coupon that they gave me. So I said, sure, I'll get off the plane. I got off the plane. I was the only one that got off the plane. Then the plane took off. True story. So
how much do you weigh, Brad?
At the time, probably like $1.15.
Just over the limit.
Yeah, that was the line. Like, oh yeah, now you're safe. And listen to the joke. There's a whole thing, but I get in the fact that there was a fat person on the plane. It's like, you should have kicked her off the plane. Like, she's qualified. She's looking, you know. And when I was doing the bit for a while, it came off way too angry and mean to fat people, which I don't want to do. But then I got a note from a fan, literally a fan, and I actually took it seriously. And then I started going, well, there's good fat people and there's bad fat people, which there are.
Right.
There's fat people that own it, that just say, like, yeah, I'm fat, don't give a shit, I like bacon, I'm not going to stop eating bacon, you can't make me stop eating bacon, fuck you, don't take my bacon. Like, there's that fat people, and then there's the fat people, like, what are you looking at? Like you know, in that they buy the one airplane seat and then they get mad at you when you're bumping into their fat, and it's like, no, you're the one pressing your wall up against me like I'm in the trash compactor in the original Star Wars. Like, that's not that's not my fault. So, and once I said there's good fat people and there's bad fat people, the bit did a lot better, because even the bad fat person who's in the audience doesn't identify themselves as a bad fat person. Like, oh, no, I'm the good fat person. I'm going to laugh at these bad fat people. So I'm not against criticism. But there was one that made me laugh from my most recent special, and you saw it, so you'll know what bit I'm talking about. When I do the Special Olympics bit, and I talk about being next to a guy, I got a tweet.
Which isn't a word and isn't a,
no.
I mean, it's a sound.
It's a sound.
And we all know what you're talking about.
Sure.
Okay.
So I got this tweet from a mom who's like, my daughter has cerebral palsy and it's severe and you're making fun of her and it's not right to make fun of people with disabilities and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote her back and I said, okay, so let me get this straight. First of all, if you remember the joke, I first make fun of people in crutches, then wheelchairs, then midgets, then whatever you're qualifying as the thing that your daughter has. And the first three were okay. The first three were fine. That, oh yeah, fuck people in wheelchairs, screw them. Yeah, but then when I got to something that applied to you, that was over the line. So just we're clear on that. Secondly, I never said cerebral palsy. Right. I said guy. What does that mean?
We don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah, you don't know what that is. That could be anything. And that could be that could be Trump voters. Like you don't know what guy means. You don't know what that is. That could be fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like you don't
just
know.
Pissed off Trump voters.
Yeah, yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, I don't care. Come at me if you try to find me at my house. I've got a wall around it. So it's like you took that and internalized it and then put it on yourself and applied it to you when it could have been anything. So, in fact, you are the more offensive person because you heard the sound and thought, he's talking about cerebral palsy. And then there's cerebral palsy people going, no, you're not talking about us. So that was on you.
Well, I thought in
daddy response from her, ironically.
No, nothing back.
No, nothing.
Because in daddy issue, I think one of the interesting things you do is that you know which jokes are going to be on the fence for some people.
Sure.
And you call them out. You actually point them out.
Absolutely.
And make that part of the process.
Yes.
Because you want to break down why they react that way.
Yes.
And then you explain to them why they reacted that way.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yes.
And that because that isn't purely for shock value, even though you know there's going to be a reaction.
Yes, which by the way, works for a comedian, does not work when you're trying to sleep with a woman.
No.
It does not work when you call them out and say, all right, this is why you're rejecting me, and this is what's going on inside your head. Because the fastest way, you could have a woman want to sleep with you, so want to sleep with you, want to just give up everything, wants nothing more than to have sex with you as a man. The fastest way to get her to change your mind is to look at her and say, you want to have sex with me, don't you?
And here's why I know
that. And you're calling out a fact, a simple fact, and then they'll go, what? No. And no, you're an asshole, and you will never. So it works as a comedian. To say, hey, this is why you didn't laugh at this joke, or this is why you did laugh at the joke, or this is why you find this offensive, blah, blah, blah. But it does not work when you're trying to sleep with a woman.
I'm sad because that sounds like that is a personal experience.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry,
sure.
Brad.
I'm fine now.
Yeah, but
you've
learned. It's
I'm
a
good.
Learning moment. It's
sure.
a teaching moment for yourself.
Life is Groundhog Day. every day you wake up, you go through the same shit, you go, oh, don't go that way to work. There's traffic. Tomorrow, I'll go this way. Don't talk to that person in IT because they're insane. Maybe just give them a cupcake a few months a year so if they come back and shoot up work, they won't shoot me. Okay, great. Learn that.
Oh,
and
God, yeah.
Every day is just you learn something new in terms of how to navigate your life to make it easier. So, yes. And the thing is when a comedian says a joke in a special, and on average, anytime you see them, that's not the first time they've said that joke.
Right.
Obviously,
you've done all that material in some form
yes.
before.
So I've heard the reactions.
Yeah.
I know how you're going to react. I know how the book ends. And I know why. I've broken down why. So because of that, now I can tell you why you're reacting that way, make you feel guilty about it, and then change your mind. Yes, these are all tricks about persuading people, and my dad was a trial attorney, so I learned a lot of this shit from him. And it applies really well to comedy. Lawyers, in a way, they don't have to be funny as much as stand-up comedians, but they are certainly performing. They are putting on a performance, and that to gain trust.
And over the years, learn how an audience is going to react to certain
Absolutely.
Things that they do. Oh, that's really interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is a whole psychology behind it. Like, and when I said like the whole trial and error thing, I found out that as a little person, I can't be angry too quickly on stage, because if I'm angry, people see an angry dwarf, they feel sorry for me, they feel scared, they feel like, oh my god, I just pissed off someone with a disability, that's not good. And I like,
is that how you tried it at first?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. And well, when
was,
I first
was
tried
it more it, of an angry at the world or kind of angry at look what?
It was a false anger. I liked angry comedians, so yeah. I was like, oh, that's how you do it.
Who did you like?
Sam Kinison, yeah. Carlos Mencia. Yeah, just angry comics.
Right.
Christopher Titus. Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
So early Roseanne Barr, just angry comics. So I liked that, but I found out that if I do that too quickly, then the audience is not good. Like there's been times when I've gotten angry because of a joke, the audience gets uneasy, and I have to tell them, like, you guys know I'm rich now, right? Like, it worked out for me. So you can laugh at this. Because the ending is happy. So laugh at this now. Enjoy the shit out of this now.
Well, see, I've been hearing you long enough now that I think I've heard you develop in a way that things became... In fact, this most recent special, which I really love, by the way,
thank
because
you.
You've managed to go from, if I may, just to do some armchair
that's
analysis,
fine.
Because I
sure.
have been hearing you for years. And to me, and I've heard Louis talk about this before, when comics really kick in
mm-hmm.
is when... their personal shit becomes the impetus for almost everything they do.
Yes.
Where there's depth to it.
Yes.
And
because now you're not just saying a surface
right.
joke that you think is funny. You're saying something that has a weight
right.
to you.
Because
when you talk about a certain topic,
right.
there's a weight to it. There are consequences. When you say the other day I walked into a bar, there's no consequences.
Right, right.
There's nothing, and not saying that those jokes aren't funny. They're funny, but they don't have that next level of making you think, being personable, and certainly applying. Because in every way, shape, and form, when you talk about personal stories, yes, they are personal to you, but everyone in that audience has some story that's close.
Right.
They have some sort of relatable thing that they can talk about that.
Well, that's what I was going to say
yeah.
is that if early on, I think maybe your comedy, which was already funny because your material
mm-hmm.
has always been good.
Thank you.
Because if it was specifically about your size
yeah.
and that was all,
yeah.
we couldn't necessarily relate to that.
Right.
But what's happened is your comedy builds from that,
sure.
but becomes relatable in every way
yeah.
because you have been able to find a way to we've all had hardships. We've all had something happen to us. We've
yeah,
all had
yeah,
love
yeah.
go, you know, kablooey.
Yeah.
We've had
we've
wacky
had,
parents.
Yeah, we've all had something. And so to kind of go along with that, I mean, and who was it? Oh, my old radio partner up in San Francisco, Kevin Klein. Not that Kevin Klein, different Kevin Klein. He told
really,
me
from a fish called
yeah,
Wanda.
Fish called
really?
Wanda, doing radio.
He
yeah,
did
yeah,
radio
yeah.
in San
yeah,
Francisco.
Wacky, wacky.
Holy
so
crap.
Many sound effects. His whole thing is he told me he's like because he saw both of my specials, Fun Size, the first one, and now this current one called Daddy Issues, where he's like the first one was your introduction. The first special was your hey look, I'm a dwarf. That's kind of weird, and it was fun, and it was happy, and it was good. This special was fun and happy, but there was edge to it. There was bite. There was risk. Now we're starting to figure out who you are and what your opinions are and what your stances are on things. It's kind of like that in a relationship. The first time you go out with someone, they don't come in with their issues just guns a-blazing. You know what I mean? You don't come in – I mean, don't get me wrong. There's probably horror dates that do happen that way
yes.
where you just sit down with someone and they go, you don't know any Jews, do you? Like, I'm sure that's happened.
Or says, you want to have sex with me,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. So you saw that date that I was on. Okay. You present sort of the best version of yourself
right.
at first on a date, and you do it in your comedy too, like or at least I did, where I sort of went like, "Hey, I'm a happy little person. This is fun. This is good. This is fun. This is happy comedy." And then the second special was like, "Okay, now you like me. Now let's talk about some shit. Now let me show you the edge. Now let's show you what." the kind of stuff I've been going through, the thoughts I've been having, and the insanity that jumps around my head every
right.
day.
Have you, do you see a time, especially as you get more of a following, because now you're filling theaters. I mean, you've got people showing up for you.
Yeah, it's
cool. You don't have to introduce yourself to people anymore.
Correct.
They probably have an expectation about your material, but do you see a time where you could go up and not even reference your size?
Yeah.
Where you just launch into whatever is going on in your life.
Well, and here's the thing is that my jokes will always be from the little person perspective because I don't know how to write jokes from the perspective of 5'2" for 5'7".
Yeah, it's your everyday existence.
Yeah,
it just
so
is.
It's always going to be my point of view. So there will always be a subtext of that. But I'm not going to go on stage in for an hour and just be like, I could take a bath in a thimble. Like, I'm not doing that.
You could do that.
The thing is I have two albums out and two specials. That's 4 hours of material.
Mm-hmm.
If it was 4 hours, just me going up going, I'm small, that's weird. You're going to get bored very fast.
Yeah.
So there's only so many times you can make... like that kind of, you can make a lollipop guilt joke. There's only so many ways.
But everything you do as you go through life, you're going to continue to encounter whether it's a reaction or some form of prejudice or, you know, people telling you that you're wrong about what you're doing. I mean, you do have the future ahead where somebody's always going to be pissed off at what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And how you, I mean, are you still getting pushback on the word midget from little people organizations?
Sure. Yeah. It's funny. Dwarves.
Cause you have defended that quite vocally and eloquently.
Yeah. And, but also as I defend my use of the word midget, I also say on air, if a little person does not want to be called a midget, do not call them that and say, well, Brad said it's okay. Like, don't force it down their throat. Be like, Brad said it's okay. He is King Dwarf. I go by his decree.
Yeah, you're not championing the word.
No.
You have just made peace with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just telling people why it doesn't bother me personally.
Right.
And I get that there will always be little people that don't want to be called midget and want that word abolished and will compare it to the N-word, which is just fucking insane to me. But I get that will always exist because the human being and nothing has made this more clear to me than the last 5 years of my life, where the human being is a dramatic animal. No matter what is going on in their life, they will find some reason why their life sucks, why their life is not perfect, and what things can change. Bill Gates has problems.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
Bill Gates has problems. Think about that for a second. George Clooney has problems.
No, I make this argument all the time with people say who have – usually it's based upon innate jealousy of somebody else. Seacrest, for some reason, is somebody who comes up all the time.
Well,
how did that asshole get
– Yeah, everyone hates Seacrest. Yeah.
And I worked with the guy, so I recognized, no matter what you think of him, that he worked his fucking ass off.
Does.
Really, really hard.
Yeah, he can retire 10 lifetimes over.
So you
can't
begrudge him the success he's had because he put in what he had to put in for it.
Sure.
But guess what? I don't know that he's an innately happy person because he fills his life with working all the time to fill whatever hole we all have in our lives
that
I fill with House of Cards in multiple episodes every night to, you know, massage my brain to sleep.
Yeah. So, yeah, we always have something. And if you don't have anything in your life, you will literally create something. You will create a disease. You will create a condition. You will say you have restless leg syndrome. And that's why your life isn't perfect.
That's a thing.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not.
No.
Don't come to me and be like, well, Brad, my life sucks because I have restless legs. My legs dangle. Shut up. You cannot compare the fact that your leg will randomly kick in the middle of the night to the fact that when I fly over 100,000 miles a year and my legs don't touch the ground when I'm sitting in a chair. Fuck off and die with your restless leg syndrome. So, but it's all about perspective. For some people, restless leg syndrome is a serious problem. For many people, that's not an issue.
Yeah.
Do you think people in third world countries in Africa have restless legs? My life would be so good, but I do not. It's not ever going to be good because when I sleep inside of my mosquito net, my legs will randomly kick out at the mosquito net. No! They don't give a shit about that.
Well, that's interesting because that means either we acquire issues when we have fewer real problems, or we have to have issues to feel alive in some way. It's kind of like you were talking before about how we have to find something that we're... I mean, basically, everybody's addicted to something and has that in us. It just depends on how we are able to control that.
Poor people don't have gluten allergies. Real poor people.
Yeah.
Real. Not like I only have $1,000 in the bank. Not that poor. I'm walking 22 miles every day to go to the water pump. Poor.
You're not going to have a homeless guy turn down a bagel by saying, I can't really have
I'm not
wheat.
That thing. Yeah. Oh, it's funny. That's how I got a... I've been mugged actually a few times in my life, and one time was I went to a gas station.
You've been mugged a few times.
Yeah. Twice.
I've never been mugged.
Yeah,
which worries me because I've lived in major cities all my life, pretty much since I graduated high school. So I feel like I'm due, and that scares the shit out of me because I've never been held up.
Bad.
Well, did you give him? Go ahead.
Well, one of the stories I told about in my first special called Fun Size, where I was in Brazil and I got mugged there, but I was warned by the State Department that you are going to get mugged. Yeah. So when it happened, I was like, all right, this is me getting mugged.
It's like part of the flyer they hand you when you get off the plane.
Yeah. I'm good. You're going to see a hot woman in a bikini and doing a samba dance, and you're going to get mugged. that is Brazil. So this one was it was at the Shell station on Harbor Boulevard in Fullerton, California, right before the 91 freeway. I got out of my car to pump gas, and two women, one was pregnant, one had a small child with them, like about a five-year-old, and she said, "Sir, can you please give me some money? I need to feed my kid." And I go, "Absolutely. You need to feed this child. There's a convenience store right here. Come in with me. Anything you want. Anything. I will get it. Multiple packages of whatever you want." She goes, No, he has a special diet. He needs he needs a certain type of food. So if you can just give me money, then that..." I'm like, No. Food is there. If you are truly desperate and you want to eat..." Because listen, I hate olives. I fucking can't stand olives, and I can't stand mushrooms. These things are filth to me. If you put me on a desert island with only olives and mushrooms, guess what I'm going to acquire a taste for? All right? Olives and mushrooms. I'm going to love the shit out of them. So, no. You don't get to tell me my son has a special diet. I'm pointing... You said you need food. I'm going to go buy you food. And they say, "No. We want your money." And I say, "Then you get nothing." A la Willy Wonka, just, "You get nothing.
Nothing.
Good day, sir." So I turn back around to fill my car with gas, thinking, well, that's the end of that. And then all of a sudden I feel hands on me. They're grabbing me. They're trying to get my wallet out. And I turned and I just punched the non-pregnant one in the stomach. She falls. The pregnant one looks at me and I go, "I can do this again. You know, I can go." And then she kind of runs off. And then the one that I hit kind of limped off after that. And some people are like, you hit a woman?" Yes, I hit a woman. She was trying to mug me.
Right.
I didn't know what they had. I didn't know if they had a knife. They came up behind me. Like, I don't know what's happening here. My only thought is get away. All right. So, yeah, I admit it. Hit a woman. I immediately went to the cops after that because I am the son of a lawyer, and I reported it because I know that if they report it, then it's the story is going to change dramatically. So, yes, and I probably should have hit the pregnant one because, man, that kid's going to have a shitty life. But I did not, okay?
Good,
And that's just something where I was like, yes, if you are desperate, it doesn't matter what someone offers you. You take it. You don't look at a $1 bill and go, "Really, dude, is that all you got?" No, you are thrilled that you have that $1 bill. Shit, that buys you two tacos at Jack in the Box.
Absolutely.
That buys you an apple pie. That buys you food.
Yeah.
So shut up. stop with the... Don't complain about what I gave you. I chose... It's amazing to me when you offer to give people things and... And I'm finding this out now with a little bit of success, where I recently bailed a friend out of jail, and I won't say why, but and I bailed him out, and then he goes, yeah, now I just need some money for the lawyer, and I go, well, I can't help you there. He goes, well, no, you can. I know you got it. I go, yeah, I have it. I would like to keep it.
Yeah,
I would like to keep it for if I need a lawyer. If that chick who I hit hears this podcast and goes, oh, now I know who hit me. Oh, good. I'm going to go. Yes, that I need it. And he got mad at me for not giving him the money for the lawyer. And I'm like, I bailed you out. Without me, you are still in jail. Like, you're wearing the suit. You're eating the crappy food. You're looking at Bubba going, I can't sleep. Like, too well with him still in the cell with me. Like, that was your life without me, and now you're mad at me because I didn't give you enough? Like, it's always
amazing. Have you had that experience a little bit more since you've had success?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have other comics around you who have turned on you a little bit once you reached a certain level?
Yeah, not comics. Comics have been good, which I've seen that happen to a lot of comedians to where – They get successful, and then people start hating on them.
Right.
Or
suddenly they're the bad guys because they got a break.
Yes, because they got a break.
That's
or
rough.
Now they're not. Well, he's not helping me. It's like, well, it's not his job.
Yeah.
It's not the headliner's job. Like, we'll be nice to you. It's their job to be nice to you, and but it's not their job to throw you a couple of bones.
Right.
Couple of gigs. It's not the thing.
I've never had more friends in radio than when I got my first L.A. job in radio.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow I was suddenly supposed to be able to kind of bring all these people in.
Yes. You had to have a 32-people show, and you probably had friends that were like, I'm funny. I can come on the radio and do some stuff for you. All right.
I would love to be on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
Can I be on the radio with you?
Yeah. All right. Come in at 4:30 in the morning to prep, and then have some bits written out. And
my favorite thing to tell somebody is, where do you live right now? In Atlanta. I say, all right. Why don't you go to Macon and start with working weekends there, running syndicated shows, and then see if you can get shift once a week, and then see. And they're like, oh.
That sounds hard.
Yeah. That's
Guess
right.
who had to do that?
All of us.
All of us.
Every one of us.
Comics had to do open mics.
Oh, God.
In
Macon, Georgia.
Yeah. Every radio DJ had to first be a DJ at some sort of small market or some shit station for no money. Elon Musk did not come in here and just have $1 billion. Hell, he had $1 billion or a lot of money, then went bankrupt and then did it again.
Yeah.
His company PayPal.
Yeah.
He could have retired off that money, and then he went broke putting it all into Tesla, SpaceX.
Right.
And then now he had to build it back up again, which he did. So he's done it twice.
Yeah.
You can't do it once?
There are a lot of differences between me and Elon Musk.
Sure.
The biggest one would be if I had PayPal money,
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm tapping
out. You would not know my name right now.
I'd be like, I got my island. I'm good. My biggest concern every day is what color Sea-Doo do I ride today? That would be my thing.
Nope, I rode blue yesterday.
Yeah,
we won't be riding the blue today.
No, that's excessive. I'm always amazed with those kinds of guys. Like you see, like a Seth MacFarlane. He still has that motor where he keeps going.
Yeah.
He keeps creating.
Yeah.
He keeps writing shows. He writes movies. He does all the voices still for Family Guy. Now he's like singing classical music. Like he's singing the Great American Songbook.
Right, right.
He's putting together show tunes and doing concerts. It never stops. I'm always so amazed by those guys and women that can do that and keep going. I would like to think that would be me, but I have a strong feeling that if I have 1 year touring in arenas, I'm out.
Well,
peace.
I don't think so though, Brad, because I think I being a creative person too, maybe not in the same way that you are or Seth MacFarlane, but I know that, like, when I've only had, like in radio, when back in the day, back in the 90s, when all you had to do was a four-hour shift, and that was your entire job, and you got paid enough to do that.
Right, because everyone was listening to radio and ad revenues were high.
Yeah. Do you know what else I did with the rest of my day?
What's that?
Not a goddamn thing. The moment I start getting busy, and I've got, like, a full day, and I've got more, when I became, like, an executive at a radio company, and then I was doing some side stuff, and then I was like, oh, you know what? I want to write the screen. The moment my brain got engaged on all those other things, and then I put stuff on myself. I don't have time to do this fucking podcast.
No, you don't.
I really don't have time. I have so much on my desk right now to do instead of talking to you. But I'm more fulfilled now doing
it's
all
momentum.
This stuff.
Start getting going.
So I think that would be you, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
don't you want to? Would you like to do TV? Would you like to write a movie?
TV,
would you
movies, like, all that jazz.
Okay.
And
you'd still do stand up, wouldn't
you? Yes, I have to. That's the real reason why I quit morning radio is because I couldn't do stand up anymore, not as much as I wanted to. And there's a comic up in San Francisco, and he'll verify this story. His name's Torio, and he will verify that I showed up one night at an open mic in San Francisco, just like with beat poets and really crappy comics, and he's a
because
comic.
Because it's San Francisco. Yeah. Because San Francisco.
Yeah, and he knew who I was, and he goes, dude, what the this is open mic. What the fuck are you doing here? And I go, I need to go on stage. Like, and he saw the look in my eyes, like, oh shit, you need to go on stage. Like, I need it to breathe. So I went on stage, and I did 20 minutes, and I called my girlfriend afterward. I'm like, no offense to you, hun, but this is the happiest I've been in the past 2 months. Like, the fact that I got to do this again.
Yeah.
Like, I got to do stand-up even for a crappy little audience. So
So that BS about you getting rich and blowing it off is...
Nah, that's not going to happen.
I mean, when you see somebody like Leno and... You know, still going off to corporate gigs and going up in Hermosa every weekend while the Tonight Show was going on. No matter what you, again, no matter what you think of that guy and what you think of his comedy.
Sure, you got to matter the work.
Goes and does it.
And
you guys, I mean, when I say you guys, when I say you people,
midgets.
I mean, you stand-up comedian types.
Yeah.
Your brain is wired so completely differently than most human beings.
Well, sure, it has to be. We go up in front of a room full of strangers. And we believe that we're going to make them laugh, like with just a microphone, no props, no sets, no music, no just, words in my thoughts.
Is it the place you are most comfortable?
Yes.
You have no fear up there.
Complete control.
You're in complete control and command of the moment.
Yes. Whatever happens in that room. If a light goes out, I can comment on it. I can fix it. If an audience member starts heckling me, I control it. Like, I could shut them down. If whatever happens, I am in control. In this random life that going around, I can drive to work and be hit by someone that's not paying attention. Something can happen to a friend that I had no control over. There's a million things that can happen. Someone could step out in the middle of the street and I could run them over, but I could just because I wasn't paying attention. Like it's but on stage, I'm in control of everything. I can make adjustments. It's like it's like being Ellen Page's character in Inception. Like you are the architect. You can make the world fold over onto itself if you want to, or you can create this wonderful, gorgeous thing.
So for you, on a night when it doesn't go exactly the way you want it to go,
sure, which,
and
you which
are
still happens.
You are in way more command than you have ever been in your career.
Thank you. I would guess. Yes.
You know that you can turn around and make that up. A night later, right?
Or
even later that night or something.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing.
Does it bug you?
Of course.
Still?
Of course.
You know, you can't walk off and just let that roll off and
no.
go, that was a shitty credit. That was a bachelorette party and that was it. You know.
No, I have to either.
If you can't win them back, you are pissed off.
Yeah, I either have to sit in my hotel room and go over like go over the tape in my head of just like all the moves I could have done, the things I could have said, and go over that endlessly. Or I need to find a stage right after that and wipe that slate clean. And just be like, oh yeah, I am good at this. I will have 700 amazing sets in a row. But if that 701st set doesn't go well, I need that 702nd set to go well. So to prove to myself that I can still do this.
Yeah.
Even though I did it 700 times in a row. It's some and the same way why I know sports is meaningless. I know that's a sick mentality. It's ridiculous, but it's what keeps me striving to be better. And so I like that I have that mentality.
Well, yeah, I think you have to. I mean, otherwise you would have given up a long time ago. Do you?
Sure.
So the hack question is always, uh-huh. You know, how long did it take you to have that kind of first set? But I'm fascinated by that. When was the one that literally was the enabler, first taste of crack?
A year and a half in.
A year and a half?
Yeah.
A year and a half was it took you that long to get the one where you were like, oh.
The first set was good by first set standards.
Yeah.
But it made me go back to do it again.
Yeah.
But
you got enough to keep
it
going.
But the set where I was like, oh my God. Like, Artie Lang tells this story that the first time he did heroin, he puts the needle into his arm, and as he's falling back, he goes, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Because he knows, like,
he's going to go back.
Yeah,
he wants to have that again.
Yeah, this is my life now. Yeah. Is chasing this feeling. That moment happened for me on stage, year and a half in Ontario Improv, October 20th. So that's 13 years ago, 2003 or 2004. It happened. I went to the Ontario Improv to see Carlos Mencia perform. I had been doing comedy a year and a half at that point. I started doing comedy because Mencia was on stage at the Bray Improv. He starts telling midget jokes. Half the audience is laughing. The half that's sitting by me is like, whoa! What? Look!
Carlos!
Look! Yeah. He notices that and goes, what the fuck? Like, why aren't you guys laughing at this? What? And he says, what? Is one of them here? And I raise my hand in the air and I go, what's up, dude? And he called me up on stage. And he started asking me questions, and I answered them. And my answers got laughs from the audience. And right then, I'm like, oh, this is fun. And right then, I was like, I'm a stand-up comedian. I started doing open mics. Fast forward a year and a half later. This time, Mencia sees me before the show at the Ontario Improv and says, hey, you're that dude. You said you wanted to be a comedian after that night. I go, yeah. He goes, well, what happened? He goes, I've been doing it for a year and a half. I've been going up and open mic nights. He goes, awesome. Do you want to open up my show tonight? I'm like, yes, yes, please, because people don't know in comedy, when you go to an open mic night, that's not a sold-out Madison Square Garden. That's a bar where they got games on where all of a sudden someone goes, we're going to start the comedy show now. Fuck you, the Lakers are on. That's what open mic night is.
And,
you have to
and
fight
it's
that.
Mostly the other open micers listening to you,
yes.
Judging you every
yes.
second, of, and not
afraid
laughing.
Afraid to
all.
Laugh
yeah.
because if they laugh, they feel like, ooh, if I laugh at him in the back room of this sizzler, he's going to get discovered, and now he's going to get a TV show. Whereas I will not get a TV show because I laughed at him. That's the comic mind, just so
oh,
you know. And that's
God.
Literally why they don't laugh.
You just make I am sick to my stomach even thinking about doing that.
Yeah,
you're nuts.
Yeah, and that. But great. That's what we need. Trial by fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I had done up to that point. And then Mencia goes, you want to open my show tonight? This is a sold-out Ontario Improv, about 380 people. And I say, yes. I go on stage. I do 5 minutes. The laughs I got were obviously the biggest crowd, so the biggest I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa, this is cool. And I go off stage. Mencia goes on stage. And says, hey, guys, what'd you guys think of Brad? And the audience applauds and goes nuts. He goes, yeah. And he goes, all right, thanks for making that decision for me. My current opening act, he's good. He's ready. He's graduating. He's going to be a headliner. He's going to be fine. There's nothing more I can teach him. He gains nothing from being my opener anymore. So I need a new opener. And you guys really like Brad, so you guys just pick the next one.
He announced this to his crowd that night.
To his audience.
Crazy.
And then I'm just like, what? Because I'm a sophomore at USC at the time. Just like, oh.
Fight on.
Yeah, fight on, buddy. And I'm like, oh, okay, so now this is what I'm going to do. The very next weekend, I was opening up for him at the Fox Theater in Bakersfield, which is about 1,200 people. So that was my week.
Wow. What's your relationship like with Carlos now? He's gotten
fantastic.
So much crap.
Yep.
Over the, has he recovered from that at all? He's touring still, right?
Yeah, he's touring like a madman.
Did he deserve as much as he got?
No.
Okay. I know you've probably talked about this on your podcast and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've talked about it, but here's the thing.
He is unfortunately now branded because of the internet as the plagiarizer comic.
Yes.
And we'll have that hanging over him, at least in the comedy community, for the rest of his life.
Yes, for the rest of his life.
It obviously hasn't ruined him professionally, but he's never going to get a TV show again.
He called me recently, so I never say never.
Oh, interesting.
So, but here's
what I just want to hear your take on him.
Here's what I will say about Mencia. If you absolutely hate Carlos Mencia, I know that what I'm about to say right now is not going to convert you. I'm not trying to convert you. I'm just trying to tell you whatever you think of him. I'm giving you more info of who the man actually is. Just take it that way, and know that nobody is perfect. There is no good guys and bad guys. There are good guys that have done some crappy things, and there are bad guys that have glimmers of hope. There are shades of gray. The world of cops and robbers, of the cops being the good guys and the robbers being the bad guys, is not the world we live in. And if you're an adult, you understand that, especially now. So nobody is perfect, is what I'm trying to say. Carlos Mencia, that moment, he took me on the road, an unknown comic. I was his opening act for 4 years. He flew me to every gig when he didn't have to. Because I thought that was the standard. Then I heard from other comedians that, like, their headliners would be like, yeah, I got a gig in Reno. Get there.
Find a way.
Yeah. Get there. Or pay for yourself. I'll pay you. You'll break maybe even. But you're getting experience.
Right.
No. Mencia paid for my flight, paid for my hotel, paid for my food. If we went out to the mall, he said, throw whatever you want on my pile. It's good. We would sit down after my sets and dissect my act, go over my act and figure out what worked, what didn't work, why it didn't work. And say what you want about him being a joke thief. The man is still he is a comedy technician, in that he can truly dissect a joke and choose the correct syllable to emphasize to make the laugh as large as it can be. That talent is there. It's undeniable. You can't tell me it's not.
So everybody I've had in this room, no matter what their background, if they've gotten us to a certain level in entertainment, writers, directors, or whatever, they've had at least one identifiable champion along the way that made the biggest difference in their career.
Sure.
And obviously, he's your guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to believe about stealing jokes or whatever, that's fine. Like I said, I'm not going to change that opinion that you currently have, so I'm not going to try.
Right.
But I can just tell you these other things about the man that that will make
Well, fans have one opinion, and that's an uneducated opinion because it's based only upon what shitty things they've read on the internet. Because all you're going to read are shitty things on the internet if you look up Carlos Mencia.
Yes.
But how is he viewed within the comedy community? Has that wound healed, do you think?
There's shades of gray. Some comics absolutely despise the man. I was on Joey Diaz's podcast yesterday, and he's got nothing but love for Carlos, and Joey is in the Rogan camp, the main camp that came after him.
Yeah.
So people have different opinions on him, and that's fine. My advice to people would just be go to a show and see for yourself.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's amazing what can happen in terms of like good guys and bad guys. Like I said, like 2 years ago, Bill Cosby was an icon. You know what I mean?
No, every
2 years ago.
Yeah, every now. I mean, I think about Funny People that Judd Apatow made.
Yeah,
there's a Bill Cosby album cover. I think used as artwork in this. I mean, like he's probably paying money to get that CGI'd out now because
now Judd Apatow is one of the main champions.
Yeah, because his hero freaking
unbelievable.
That was my first. When I was a kid, I wasn't my album collection before. before I started getting into, you know, my geeky rock. I was an ELO Queen guy.
Wow.
You know, but my record collection was Bill Cosby and Monty Python albums and
nice.
The Richard Pryor best of that I
yes.
snuck home and listened to
of
with
course you
headphones
did. Oh, I did the same thing with Eddie Murphy. So, yeah,
yeah.
It's that thing. Now, because of the absolutely horrific things that Cosby did, allegedly, are we now going to deny that body of work? I mean, Gerard Carmichael on The Carmichael Show did a brilliant episode on this entire thing.
Oh, really?
Brilliant.
Really?
And I can't emphasize brilliant enough, where he talked about his character in the show is like, yeah, I'm going to go see Bill Cosby perform tonight. And everyone freaks out, and his girlfriend's mad at him. He's like, all right, have you seen a Woody Allen movie in the last 2 years?
Right.
And she's like, well, yeah, but that's it. It's like, no. That's not.
That's funny, because Manhattan was on the other night, and Manhattan has consistently been one of my favorite top five movies all
yes.
time. And it was on some channel over the weekend, and I'm in that place where it's like I couldn't be a bigger Woody Allen fan, especially that right in my wheelhouse, those movies, Woody, Annie Hall, and Manhattan,
yep.
right in there. And there's a segment, it was funny line, great performance, funny line, scene with Meryl Hemingway. And I'm like, ew!
Oh, no!
And
yeah.
everything just kind of washed over me. It's like I'm really uncomfortable right now,
yeah.
and I got to move it down.
Yeah, and I would say there's no answer.
There isn't. It's the most complicated thing, because the art can be
yes.
so good.
Yes.
People were talking about Roman Polanski's in the frickin' news again.
Yeah.
And you look at Chinatown, and it's like,
yeah,
so how do you separate
the
work from the man?
Right. I'm not going to tell you that you cannot. Watch a Woody Allen movie. You cannot listen to a Bill Cosby album.
Yeah.
You can't hear Chris Brown's music. Like, you can't. Like,
yeah.
There's a
me personally
yeah.
boycotting watching Manhattan is not going to change anything.
No. It's not.
No.
It's not. And it's already on,
yeah.
so you're not putting extra money in his pocket. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? Or it's on demand or whatever.
Right.
So it's this thing where there's no right answer. If you told me I'm not going to listen to Cosby albums, I'm not going to listen to Chris Brown music, I'm not going to watch Woody Allen movies, I'll respect that. If you say I'm going to do all these things and also hate the person individually, I'll respect that as well.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, like the best argument for that is the thing that you just said, where you were enjoying the movie until you had a visceral reaction
yeah. Yeah.
to something in the film, and it's like, well, I guess I can't enjoy that one anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe if you watch Annie Hall, it'll be different.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe,
but I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think now I'm kind of. I mean, I've had my enjoyment out of those things, but now I really like. I don't. In my own mind, I don't want to support my own enjoyment
right.
of that thing.
Right. Can you listen to a Michael Jackson album? Can you?
I have to play Michael Jackson multiple times a
yes.
day at my job.
Right.
And yeah.
And it's strange.
It's yeah.
because if you played a Michael Jackson album, everyone goes nuts in terms of enjoyment, and they dance to Dirty Diana, and they dance to all those songs. But if a comedy station played a Bill Cosby track,
oh my God,
holy shit,
yeah,
people would freak the fuck out,
yeah,
and yeah, it's amazing how we kind of pick and choose,
yeah, we'll compartmentalize that stuff,
like right now we're all going after Baylor University for the stuff that happened there, which was egregious and horrible and awful,
yeah.
but hey, if you live in Tampa Bay. Go Bucks, and I hope Jameis Winston throws a touchdown pass. You know what I mean? It's weird how you pick and choose.
I got a friend who just actually Facebooked something brilliant yesterday, which I never say. It was about Johnny Depp. He said, I'm sure Johnny Depp will suffer the consequences of his actions just like, and then he listed off, like 15 famous male actors who've been accused of domestic violence
sure.
who are still working and still, you know, very
sure.
prominent to this day.
And Frank Sinatra.
And he ended it with, you know what? I could keep going, but I got work to do. And
yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And it's
just one of those things where do you draw the line, and do you draw it consistently across the board? Personally, like, the what, like, I could tell you that I don't listen to Chris Brown records because of what he did to Rihanna, but really it's just because I think his music sucks. Like, if he came out and it had... Like,
so you're on the surface, you're going to take the high road.
Sure.
But
in actuality,
never listened to Chris Brown in the first place.
No, no. It's horrible music. It's awful. So I'm not going to take the moral high ground. I mean, I'll say I do, but then at the core of it, I don't like it because it's just shit. Now, right. I mean, like, now if it comes out that Prince was smacking up women, God, I'm going to have some soul searching.
You've got a moral dilemma on your hands.
Now
this is that Michael versus Cosby thing. It's like, well, you know what? I'm going to still maintain my level of adoration for Michael, and I'm going to put, Brad, you got a 9-hour commute to Brea here, and I don't want to deprive people of your comedy stylings later tonight.
Can I plug some shit?
I will do that, too, in the outer portions. Of,
okay.
I'm putting my hands in the air. Like, you're going to understand what this means.
Yeah, you're going to bookend it.
Talk about you while you're gone, basically.
Okay,
But plug anything you want, besides Daddy Issues, which is currently on Showtime.
Yes.
This is what I do for you.
Thank you.
I signed up for Showtime On Demand just so I could watch your show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Admittedly, it was the free trial, and I'll probably cancel it.
Sure.
But you get credit for that click or that view or whatever it is.
Shameless is a good show. You can go back and watch Dexter.
I'll watch, I'll see if I can binge watch Dexter for a week. That'll take over House of Cards.
Dice's new show is pretty good.
Ray Donovan. I'm going for Ray Donovan.
Go for Ray. It's a great network. Okay. I mean, there's tons of stuff.
We love Showtime. Showtime!
Yeah. And also, Showtime is owned by CBS, which owns the building that we're currently in. So, Showtime.
For the moment.
Yeah, right.
What do you want to plug?
Basically, if you're listening to this podcast, you are familiar with podcasts. So please download my podcast. It's called the About Last Night podcast. We've had insane guests. We've had...
Crazy, man. You've had frickin' Mark Maron on.
Yep.
You've had Melissa McCarthy.
Yep.
Susan Sarandon.
Yep.
A bunch of people I don't know.
Bob Saget, Kevin Nealon, Dana Carvey multiple times.
I'm a friend of Paul Feig.
Yeah.
And
Paul Feig, twice.
Has put me off until August, but you've got one in the can.
Yeah, with Paul Feig.
By the way, can I do a Paul Feig podcast with you real quick?
Sure.
How's he handling all the negative crap?
You know what? Here's what it is.
I like Paul is so nice.
Yeah.
And awesome.
He's one of the best guys in Hollywood.
Yeah.
He's just a sweetheart of a man. And,
he doesn't deserve the shit.
No, and it's amazing to me that you could make a movie as great as The Heat, as Bridesmaids,
mm-hmm.
as Spy, which were all fantastic.
Great comedies.
Wonderful comedies.
Big, fun, mainstream comedies quality.
Yeah, and then they say, oh, well, I'm going to make Ghostbusters now. And everyone goes, no!
And then
him.
And then trailer number one is like,
worst movie ever. And his movies are notoriously bad in trailers because he doesn't like to reveal the best jokes in the trailer.
I thought Spy was going to be horrible.
Yes.
When I saw the scooter joke gag,
right,
that's what they put in the trailer?
Well, because you have to, because all the other jokes have so much context behind them.
Yeah.
And action that builds up to that you can't show in literally 10 seconds. So that's what you have to do in a comedy trailer. It's so hard to put a good comedy trailer together. So for Paul,
I don't want you to blow your whole episode, but
I'm
such a fan, and he's not a good friend. We went to USC together, so the same time, and he has promised for 2 years to do my podcast.
So funny.
Would you call him? Would you please let him know that I'm a good
absolutely.
Guy?
Absolutely, of course. And to be honest with you, he's just waiting for the movie to come out because he knows that if the movie comes out and it is good, it's going to trump all this.
Yeah.
And now people will curse the same people that were cursing it will now go and shame the shamers. Be like, who are these people that are saying Ghostbusters is not going to be good with women? Not me. I was on board from day one. All right, let's check your YouTube comment history, Bill Murray for Life 2727. You know what I mean? It's unnecessary hate. Watch the movie. Enjoy the movie. If it's great, fantastic. If it's not good, who gives a shit? Because if the movie comes out, it doesn't mean the first Ghostbusters now ceases to exist.
No.
You can still go back and watch it. So, listen to my podcast.
About last night.
Yes. Go to my website, bradwilliamscomedy.com. Tons of tour dates coming up.
And you're headed off to where are you going?
China.
No.
on Monday.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
You're going to China?
Yeah, I'm going to China.
Is that on your website?
Yeah.
What are you doing in China?
Comedy.
And how are the Chinese? Have you done China?
Nope. I mean, no. I'm gonna try it out.
What the hell, Brad?
Yeah, man. It's gonna be nuts.
Does that now? See, that's. Are you scared?
Yeah. Oh, I'm scared. I'm gonna bomb because I know I can't make certain references because right now a big chunk of my act is what the fuck is going on in this country, and I can't say that if I'm in another country because I don't know.
Oh wow.
Because I'm not doing military bases
and it's not
doing
like
bars and
it's not
clubs
like
and,
you're going to a country that has been so westernized that they're gonna be like I mean they got McDonald's or whatever
they got YouTube and that's why there's an insurgence of American comedy is if I got YouTube
crazy.
So now they're craving American comedy.
Now I'm sick to my stomach again. All over again for you. No, don't go into China.
No, it's fine.
All right, quick questions, quick answers. We'll jump around.
Sure.
You grew up in Orange. You were born in Orange.
Yeah, born at St. Joe's Hospital in Orange, California.
Where'd you go? And you went to USC. What'd you major in?
Communication. So when I dropped out of college to be a stand-up comedian, we did not lose a cancer cure. We're good.
Well, I went to cinema school, and so the world is missing out on Citizen Kane Part 2.
Damn right it is.
But I'm going to get there. I'm working on it.
You hear? Well, you can just be like Spielberg, get denied from the film school three times, and then go out and be the greatest director ever, and then buy a building on the USC campus as a fuck you. That is what they call not fuck you money, fuck me money.
Yeah.
Because you just donated $20 million just to say fuck you.
Yeah.
Like it cost you $20 million to say fuck you. Yeah.
What did your mom do?
Mom was a housewife. Dad was a lawyer. And that's what they did.
Are you going to be a Rams fan?
Fuck yeah, I am.
Or have you already been a Rams fan?
I was, but then they left. And it's like some people are like, well, what? You stopped being a Rams fan when they left? Yeah, you don't keep hanging out with your ex when she's fucking another guy. When she's winning Super Bowls for other people.
I could never see myself wearing anything that said St. Louis on it. It just feels weird.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I mean, and I'm a diehard Broncos fan. I have been since day one. My dad went to Stanford with Elway. So he forced us to be Broncos fans. And once you're a team, that's your team. So that's your team. So, but they're in the AFC, so I can still be a fan of the Rams when they're in the NFC. And yeah, I'm pretty much a homer for all the LA teams, except the Kings. I go to the games, but I'm more of a Ducks fan.
When you are forced up on a karaoke stage, your go-to song is?
Metallica's cover of Bob Seger's Turn the Page.
Nobody's got that in their karaoke list, Brad.
I do.
That's bullshit. No, you can't just pick something that obscure.
Bon Jovi, Wanted Dead or Alive. Or the most fun song I can do is by the Bloodhound Gang. It's called A Lap Dance Is Always Better When the Stripper Is Crying.
And that's on the karaoke list?
A lot of them. And man, when I go into it, when I hit that first chorus, it's kind of this weird country thing where it's like, lap dance is always better when the stripper is crying. The looks on people's faces are just like, huh? It's like Scooby-Doo going, Raggy?
That's fantastic.
Why is the lap dance better when the stripper is crying? So, yeah, I love the looks on the faces because I'm still a comedian at heart. So I'll do that. I like to do joke songs. They're fun for me. I'll do any Weird Al hit in the book.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'll do Taco Grande.
I'm shocked at how many songs there are available. I haven't been to karaoke in a long time, and the last time I went, the book was ginormous.
Yeah, just pick out a song. Just say any song. They have it.
I will advise you, do not pick some obscure hit by Fiona Apple. That is a mood killer in the room.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that because I witnessed it firsthand.
Unless you're a hot girl and you decide to sing Criminal, that's about it. It's about it.
It was a hot girl. She did not pick Criminal.
See? That's the problem. Oh. Got to pick Criminal.
And by the way, The Greatest Love of All, Whitney Houston, you can't sing it as well.
Don't.
So don't even try.
Just don't do anything, Whitney. Yeah. Maybe I want to dance with somebody if you have like four people up there with you.
Yes, tempo, upbeat, get the group up there. Absolutely. Yeah.
And
we should do, Brad and I are introducing our new podcast, karaoke etiquette.
Well, definitely. And sure, I say Metallica's cover of Turn the Page, but I never sing that song with a packed house. Fuck no.
You just do that for your pals.
Yeah, that's when it's like a lonely bar and there's like 10 of you there. That's when you sing that one. No. When there's a packed house, you don't go up and sing. You're like, okay, this was a B-side from Alanis Morissette's fourth album? Fuck you. No. I don't do the emotional shit. If it's a packed house, Billy Idol, Money Money, bring it. That's what I do when the place goes ape shit.
Final question.
Yes.
And this is my bring it back around to the name of this podcast, which has literally zero to do with the podcast. have you ever, or if not, would you be willing to work with a monkey?
Ooh. Well, for one gig that I did take, I was on a TV show on Nickelodeon called Sam and Cat, where I was handcuffed to Ariana Grande for a week. So a monkey can't be worse than that. Because I posted that picture on Instagram and me handcuffed her. I was like, oh, you're so lucky. I'm like, nope.
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 Oh, my God. Have you told that story anywhere?
No.
Oh, I'm bringing you back for part two, man.
Oh, I will tell that story.
Jesus.
My God, will I tell that story.
All right. This is the cliffhanger, then. We're leaving it there.
Sure. This is the end of the episode of Game of Thrones where someone big dies, it fades to black, and you're like, what happens next? Come on! This is our version of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, Brad Williams. Just picture Brad Williams handcuffed to Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
And there's, we'll fade in kind of like in the background, a monkey face.
Song, Careless Whisper.
Or Metallica's cover of Bob Seger's Turn the Page. Brad, you're awesome.
Thank you very much.
I just love hearing you and watching you and wish you nothing but success. And I hope you make it back from China alive and without lung cancer.
I hope so, too.
And Daddy's Issues on Showtime, About Last Night, the podcast.
Yep.
Check out the website.
BradWilliamsComedy.com. Funny Brad on Twitter. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Just look me up. Follow me and have a great time doing it.
All right, man. You're the best.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Get a monkey. Get a monkey!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.